And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, we are at the midpoint of the year. There's 122 days behind us and 122 days in front of us. Now, keep in mind that during leap years, it changes just a little bit. But we won't worry about a little thing like that. And of course, it has been a date in history that has had a lot of activity. Now, we're coming up on 4th of July weekend. And, of course, the Roswell crash. They used to get unbelievable number of people. This year, I don't think there's going to be much. Of course, since it came under the control of the dilettantes, it hadn't been what it was anyway. In the year 437 A.D., Emperor Valentinian III begins his reign over the Western Roman Empire. His mother, Galla Placidia, ends her regency, but yeah, unfortunately, everybody and their brother who has something to sell seems to have my phone number. And since we're always trying to report breaking news as soon as it happens, I can't very well cut it off. Regarding the Western Roman Empire, the Roman Empire got to be so big it couldn't be ruled by one person. Divided up into the Eastern and Western Empire. Western Empire based in Rome, the Eastern Empire based in Constantinople. But when the Western Empire collapsed, the Eastern Empire continued for quite some time afterward. Now in the year 626 AD, Li Shimin, the future emperor, Taizong of Tang, ambushes and kills his rival brothers, Li Yunhai and Li Jianqing in the Xuanwu Gate Incident. In 706, Emperor Zongzong of Tang enters the bodies of relatives in the Quanling Mausoleum located on Mount Ling outside Chang'an. In 866, the Battle of Brisarth. The Franks, led by Robert the Strong, are defeated by a joint Breton-Viking army. 936, King Henry the Fowler dies in his royal palace in Memleben, succeeded by son Otto I, who becomes the ruler of East Francia. 963, the Byzantine army proclaims Nikephoros II, focus emperor of the Romans on the plains outside Cappadocian Caesarea. 1298, the Battle of Gohain is fought between Albert I of Habsburg and Adolf of Nassau-Weilburg. 1494, the Treaty of Tordesillas is ratified by Spain. 1504, Bogdan III, the One-Eyed, becomes Voivode of Moldavia. 1555, Ottoman Admiral Turgut Reis sacks the Italian city of Paola. 1561, Menas, Emperor of Ethiopia, defeats a revolt in Imphras. 1582, the Battle of Yamazaki. Toyotomi Hideyoshi defeats Akechi Mitsuhide. 1613, the first English expedition from Virginia against Acadia, led by Samuel Argall, takes place. 1644, English Civil War, Battle of Marston Moor. 1645, Battle of Alford. The so-called Wars of the Three Kingdoms. 1698, Thomas Savory patents the first steam engine. 1776, the American Revolution, the Continental Congress adopts a resolution severing ties with Great Britain, although the wording of the Declaration of Independence wasn't published till July 4th. 1816, the French frigate Medusa strikes the Bank of Argonne and 151 people on board have to be evacuated on an improvised raft. 1822, 35 slaves, including Denmark Vesey, are hanged in South Carolina, have been accused of organizing a rebellion. 1823, Bahia Independence Day. The end of Portuguese rule in Brazil with the final defeat of the Portuguese crown loyalists in the province of Bahia. 1839, 20 miles off the coast of Cuba, 53 kidnapped Africans led by Joseph Sinque mutiny and take over the ship Amistad. 1853, the Russian army crosses the Prus River into the Danube principalities, Moldavia and Wallachia, providing the spark that will set off the Crimean War. 1871, Victor Emmanuel II of Italy enters Rome after having conquered it from the Papal States. See, at one point in time, the Pope had his own army. 1881, Charles Guiteau shoots and fatally wounds President Garfield, who died September 19th from complications from his wounds. 1890, Congress passed the Sherman Antitrust Act. 1897, British Italian engineer Guglielmo Marconi obtains a patent for the radio in London. 1900, the first Zeppelin flight takes place on Lake Constance near Friedrichshafen in Germany. 1900, Jean Sibelius Finlandia receives its premier performance in Helsinki with the Helsinki Philharmonic Society conducted by Robert Kohanis. 1921, Warren G. Harding signs the Knox-Porter Resolution, formally ending the war between the U.S. and Germany. 1934, the Night of the Long Knives ends with the death of Ernest Röhm, who was commander of Hitler's SA, the Brown Shirts. What was interesting, he didn't know he was considered a traitor. He thought it was a revolt against Hitler. So, as I understand it, he died praising Hitler. Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan are last heard from over the Pacific Ocean while attempting to make the first equatorial round-the-world flight. 1940, Indian independence leader Subhas Chandra Bose is arrested and detained in Calcutta. 1940, the SS Arundora Star is sunk by the U-47 in the North Atlantic with the loss of over 800 people, mostly civilians. 1962, the first Walmart store, then known as Walmart, opens for business in Rogers, Arkansas. 1964, Lyndon Johnson signs the Civil Rights Act of 1964 meant to prohibit segregation in public places. 1966, France conducts its first nuclear weapons test in the Pacific on Mururoa Atoll. 1976, end of South Vietnam. North of Vietnam annexes the former South Vietnam to form the Unified Socialist Republic of Vietnam. Without our troops there, when the North Vietnamese attacked, it folded up like a cheap suitcase. 1986, Rodrigo Rojas and Carmen Gloria Quintana burned alive during a street demonstration against the dictatorship of General Augusto Pinochet in Chile. 1990, in the 1990 Mecca tunnel tragedy, 1,400 pilgrims are suffocated to death and trampled in a pedestrian tunnel leading to the holy city of Mecca. 1994, U.S. Air Flight 1016 crashes near Charlotte Douglas International Airport, kills 37 of the 57 on board. 1997, Bank of Thailand floats the baht, triggering the Asian financial crisis. 2000, Vincent Fox Quesada, elected the first president of Mexico from an opposition party, the Partido Acción Nacional, after more than 70 years of rule by the Partido Revolucionario Institucional. 2001, the Abio Core self-contained artificial heart is first implanted. 2002, Steve Fawcett becomes the first person to fly solo around the world nonstop in a balloon. 2005, the Live 8 benefit concert takes place in the G8 states and in South Africa. More than 1,000 musicians performed and are broadcast on 182 TV networks and 2,000 radio networks. 2008, Colombia conflict. Ingrid Betancourt, a member of the Chamber of Representatives of Colombia, is released from captivity after being held for 6.5 years by the FARC. 2010, the South Kivu tank truck explosion in the Democratic Republic of Congo kills at least 230 people. 2013, International Astronomical Union names Pluto's fourth and fifth moons, Kerberos and Styx. 2013, a magnitude 6.1 earthquake strikes Aceh, Indonesia, kills 42 and injures 420 more. An unbelievable number of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays, Christian Feast Day, Eberle and Adam in the Coptic Church, Bernardino Relino, Feast of the Visitation in the Anglican Church, Monagundus, Otto Bamberg, Odosius, Martinian and Processus, Pisoe in the Coptic Church, Stephen III of Moldavia, earliest day on which Unity Day can fall, July 8th, the latest, celebrated on the Tuesday following Heroes Day in Zambia, Flag Day in Caracas, Palio di Provenzano in Siena, Italy, Police Day in Azerbaijan. The sad thing is we may not see any more celebrations of the police, thanks to all the lunatics that are going on. In 311, St. Meliciades begins his reign as Catholic Pope. In 706, the remains of Chinese Emperor Gaozong, his wife Empress Wu Zetian, and family members interred in the Qinlong Mausoleum by Emperor Zhongzong outside let's see, 1140, Hart Pert becomes Bishop of Utrecht. 1214, the Battle of La Roche-Aux-Moines, part of King John of England's attempt to reclaim Normandy from France. And in 1505, after an encounter with a violent thunderstorm, Martin Luther declares he'll become a monk. 1561, Manas, Emperor of Ethiopia, defeats a revolt. Let's see. 1578, Martin Frobisher sights Baffin Island. 1644, the Battle of Marston Moor. Parliamentary forces under Lords Fairfax and Manchester defeat royalists led by Prince Rupert. 1681, the Earl of Shaftesbury arrested for high treason. 1687, King James II disbands the English Parliament. 1776, New Jersey gives the right to vote to all adults who could show a net worth of £50, which was a good bit of money in those days. In 1776, at the Continental Congress, John Dickinson abstains from the votes that declare independence. That way, if everything went south, he could say, I didn't vote for it. And if it won, as it did, he can say, I was supporting you. 1787, the Marquis de Sade shouts from the Bastille, prisoners are being slaughtered. He was a philosopher and a writer, and considered... from his name is where we get the word sadist, supposedly. 1843, an alligator falls from the sky during a thunderstorm in Charleston, South Carolina. 1847, an envelope bearing the first U.S. 10-cent stamp was used. That envelope still exists today. 1849, Giuseppe Garibaldi begins a hunger strike in Rome. 1850, Benjamin Lane patents a gas mask. that had a built-in breathing apparatus. In 1862, Lincoln signs an act granting land for state agricultural colleges. And today was the second day of the Battle of Gettysburg. 1864, General Early and Confederate forces reach Winchester en route to Washington, D.C. 1865, one-time Methodist Reformed Church minister William Booth and his wife Catherine found the Salvation Army as the East London Christian Mission. 1885, Canada's Northwest Insurrection ends with the surrender of Big Bear. 1901, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid rob a train of $40,000 at Wagner, Montana. That was considered a fortune in those days. 1911, Detroit Tigers legend Ty Cobb hits in his 40th straight game. 1915, Eric Munter, an instructor in German at Cornell, explodes a bomb in the U.S. Senate reception room. If they want to do away with things, they ought to do away with professors at these universities. They're there to teach. They're not there to do political shenanigans. 1916, the Russian offensive in Armenia. 1917, riots in East St. Louis, Missouri. 1921, in boxing's first million-dollar gate, world heavyweight champion Jack Dempsey knocks out Frenchman Georges Carpentier in the round four of his third title defense. $1.7 million is actually what the gate was. 1926, the U.S. Army Air Corps is created. Distinguished Flying Cross is authorized to award heroism and extraordinary achievement while participating in an aerial flight. 1928, British Parliament reduces the age for women to vote to 21, same as men. 1928, the Jenkins Television Corporation, owned by Charles Jenkins, goes on the air with W3XK, the first television broadcasting station in the country. 1934, General Lázaro Cárdenas elected president of Mexico. 1940, Churchill meets Major General Bernard Montgomery. 1943, Lieutenant Charles Hall becomes the first African-American pilot to shoot down a Nazi plane. 1944, German Field Marshal Günther von Klug replaces General von Rundstedt. 1947, military coup discovered in France. Anything else of interest? The Bob and Ray Show premiered on NBC Radio in 1951. 1955, the Lawrence Welk Show premiered on ABC. My parents never missed that. 1956, Elvis recorded Hound Dog and Don't Be Cruel on this date. 1957, the first submarine designed to fire guided missiles was launched. It was the Greyback. 1962, Fidel Castro visited Moscow. I think that pretty much wraps up the oddities of the time. Now we're going to turn to the topic I started yesterday, which is talking about unidentified flying objects, UFOs. You know, there's been a lot of talk and tens of thousands of books written about aliens and some of the mysteries of space. You know, closer to home, there have been a lot of questions about whether or not the human race has had contact with alien races. In the Bible, there's discussion about the sons of God having sexual intercourse with the daughters of man. The results, of course, were called the Nephilim, considered giants and great men of old. Now, if you look at Genesis chapter 4, chapter 6, verse 4, the name is also used in reference to giants who inhabited Canaan at the time of the Israelite conquest. And a similar Hebrew word with different vowel sounds is used in Ezekiel chapter 32, verse 27, to refer to dead Philistine warriors. You know, it's never been thoroughly determined exactly what a Nephilim is. Many suggested interpretations are based on the assumption the word is a derivation of the Hebrew verbal root infabun, which means fall. Robert Baker Girdlestone argued the word comes from the Hefil causative stem, implying the Nephilim are to be perceived as those who that caused others to fall. And of course, we have all kinds of philosophical ramblings about the nature of the Nephilim. Now, if you look at the Bible, as one person I knew said, a series of what amounts to fairy tales. You get one approach. If you look at it as somewhat historical in nature, you get another. Now, I wrote a book called UFOs and Ancient Gods. There are a lot of legends about ancient gods interacting with early man to create civilization and all its many wonders. Of course, there are many who believe that ancient gods were just myths and make-believe. Others believe they were actually aliens that came to this planet to exploit it for its natural resources. So the question, I guess, is, did the gods create mankind, or did the gods come to exploit a pre-existing mankind? Now, we all know the story in the Bible of when God cast out a third of his angels from heaven to earth because they joined Lucifer in a rebellion. Fallen angels were called the Nephilim in the Bible, interbred with human females. Now, among other things, this interbreeding showed the gods and humans were, in fact, somehow genetically related. Now, if Zachariah Sitchin was correct, and the Anunnaki were space travelers who came to Earth to exploit it for its riches, the so-called fallen angels were rebellious spacemen who decided to take advantage of the locals. Now, this wouldn't be the first time that primitives mistook advanced beings and technology as something coming from the gods. I would point you to something as recent as World War II. Primitive tribesmen in the Pacific, you know, some of the islands had never been visited before. And as aircraft crashed for whatever reason, they viewed what was on board the plane as riches sent by the gods. A religion grew up around the idea that these riches came from the gods and praying to them would keep the flow of goods coming. These religions were known as cargo cults. Now, the Sumerians claim that the gods came from the heavens above and taught them many works and wonders of life. According to legend, the chief teacher for the Sumerians was an entity called Oannes. And he was said to be half fish, half man. Now, the Sumerians accurately recorded and described our galaxy, every planet within it, down to the colors, textures, rotations, and locations. So you have to ask yourself, how could a primitive society know all this information about planets they'd never been to? Now, this, for their part, the Sumerians claimed that the gods from above, the enlightened ones, as they called them, came down from the heavens and taught them many arts. Now, this sounds very much like God's fallen angels may have come to earth and taught their secrets to mankind and set themselves up as gods in their own right. Now, these gods would come and go as they please into and out of our planet. Or maybe these superior beings were actually space travelers. Now, these beings described by the Sumerians have many things in common with our modern-day aliens. And you really need to think about all the ancient gods recorded throughout our history. Could all these civilizations who claim to know and walk with these gods just be crazier than loons? Or could what they say be true? Now, there's another theory that has a lot to be said for it. Maybe current civilization is based on a much older, advanced civilization destroyed by some kind of cataclysm. Under this scenario, the gods that roamed the earth and taught early man might be survivors of this early civilization, and they were helping recreate their civilization through the imparting of these secrets. Of course, there are also stories the gods of earth were actually survivors of a war in the heavens. Now, not all are familiar with the stories about the wars in heavens. It was said that Jesus cleansed the heaven of Satan and his demons and cast them down to earth, which I guess would put us in line of being a prison planet. Now, the Christian Bible's book of Revelation describes a war in heaven between angels led by Michael, the archangel, versus those led by the dragon, identified with the devil and with Satan. And the followers of the dragon were defeated and thrown down to the earth. So you have to ask yourself, could this planet have been used as a prison? Now, Revelation's war in heaven has been compared to the idea of fallen angels, and possible parallels have been proposed in the Hebrew Bible and even in the Dead Sea Scrolls. The Bible says that Satan keeps transforming himself into an angel of light, and many people claim to have seen angels of light today as well as in history. Those who favor this theory believe the idea of aliens actually comes from Satan. These same fanatics say that anything that's not found in God's Word is actually satanic in nature. Now, this certainly demonstrates a very narrow-minded attitude. And it's these type of attitudes that keeps the actual truth hidden. Under this theory, of course, every time somebody is supposedly abducted by aliens and prays to the Lord to protect them, it's said the aliens vanish. And if you ever watch any of these alien abduction shows, you can see very similar things shown. A few people who claim to have cried out to the Lord are said to have found the abduction stops. Well, how much of this is real and how much was an attempt on the part of the entities to support the idea of religious intervention? You know, from a practical standpoint, religion is a fantastic control mechanism, as anything taboo is contrary to the religion of the time is safe from discovery by the vast majority of the population. You know, scientists who do their research without leaving their own private ivory towers believe abductees suffer from sleep paralysis, and they're actually imagining everything that happens to them at night. The victims of so-called alien abduction have even reported seeing all kinds of things, from aliens to old hags, a mysterious dark man, and others of the same ilk. Some of those who believe they're actually abducted report being held down, not being able to speak. Well, the origins of demons isn't commonly known in our time, but in ancient times, it was well understood that demons are the disembodied spirits of the Nephilim. Now, if you recall, the Nephilim, the earthborn giants of the days of Noah, were the offspring of what were described as fallen angels and the daughters of men. According to numerous ancient rabbinic and early church texts, when the Nephilim died, their spirits became disembodied and roamed the earth, harassing mankind. Mysterious teachers, strange aerial craft, and other things we call UFO events have been with us for thousands of years, but there are many who choose to place the beginning of the modern UFO phenomena at the point of Kenneth Arnold's sighting in 1947 of what he called a shiny disk. But in spite of that, there's a direct relationship between UFOs and the fallen angels. And stories of encounters with angels handed down through the scriptures of many religions and some of the arguments in favor of the angelic interpretation of ancient and modern UFO accounts find support in these theories. It's interesting to note that most people regard angels as existing in a spiritual plane only. However, angels, fallen or not, if you read the material, it's available, exist in both the physical and the spiritual planes. You know, frankly, in ancient religious writings, angels were messengers. They were given wings in paintings in order to demonstrate the idea that they speedily went about their missions. According to the Bible, so rife were the Nephilim and their offspring, along with Satan's offspring, which had polluted the gene pool of man eons earlier, that only Noah was pure in his ancestry. So God sent the flood to destroy everybody but Noah and his immediate family. Now the fallen angels are said to once again be loose on the earth, mixing their DNA with ours. Now, there's been a lot of talk and research conducted by archaeologists, anthropologists, and anybody else with a knowledgeist after their name who seek to determine where man may have originated. You know, so many scientists, like religious fanatics pointing at the Bible, point to Darwin's theory of evolution as the end-all, be-all. But if you think about the name, the theory of evolution, it's never been proven. It assumes the existence of a missing link that's never been found. And until it can be found, assuming that it exists, then Darwin's theory of evolution is going to remain just a theory. Whatever the field of study of these ologists, there's no question that mainstream scientists all profess to believe that man was created or developed and progressed along a steady timeline where each change or improvement to the species happened over millennia. But what if this isn't true? What if the human race has been selectively modified and guided over millions of years? Well, there's a large body of evidence that supports this premise. There's even some belief that early man may well have been decidedly different from modern man. One example is the belief that primitive humans are thought to have been more telepathic before the development of language by prehistoric tribes. Now, this would explain much in the development of those we referred to as psychics. They merely retained some of their ancestors' abilities, more than the norm. And certainly this is possible. In trying to determine how the human race developed, William McNeil made the observation in his book, The Rise of the West, A History of Human Community, that how modern types of men originated is one of the unsolved puzzles of archaeology and physical anthropology. He said cultural evolution must have begun among pre-human ancestors of modern man. And for those who choose to throw dogma out the window And there are certain avenues within these fields of study that are considered forbidden as they don't allow the orthodox premise laid down within each scientific field. See, the leaders of the development of these scientific fields establish the parameters of what's acceptable research. And if you go outside acceptable research, you're ostracized by your own colleagues. Now, there have been many instances of what can only be viewed as paranormal events that have had a decided impact on the human race. According to accepted theory, mankind's ancestor apes were probably present on Earth as long as 25 million years ago. Evolution of hominids, or man-like apes, occurred about 14 million years ago. And about 2 million years ago, the first beings who could be described as Homo or man-like appeared in Africa. And then, a million years ago, we see the appearance of Homo erectus. About 900,000 years later, we see the appearance of the first being that's been classified as primitive man, the infamous Neanderthal man. Now, mainstream science believes between the appearance of the first man-like creature and Neanderthal man was about 2 million years. But in spite of this time span, both the man-like creature and Neanderthal look alike and use similar stone tools. So why would there be a long time span? Logically, changes that eventually appear in modern man couldn't have happened overnight. So the theory is a couple of million years was needed. But what if that wasn't true? Homo sapien appeared about 35,000 years ago. And what distinguished Homo sapien from Neanderthal man, you might ask? The ability to think, which a lot of folks have lost recently, especially those who get elected to Congress. Those thinking Homo sapiens were called Cro-Magnons. Look very much like modern man physically. Well, this timeline is what we've been taught in school. And it's well and good, but it does raise some interesting questions. For example, what happened to a Neanderthal once Cro-Magnon man appeared? Well, once you look behind the curtain, so to speak, it's clear there are a number of mysteries involving the development of the human race. From the evidence, it seems relatively clear the development of early man and the move toward organized civilization was influenced, if not guided, by what can only be looked at as outside forces. According to accepted scientific theory, Neanderthal man had dominated the planet for a couple of million years. If that's the case, why'd they vanish after the arrival of Cro-Magnon? Doesn't make any logical sense. If Neanderthal man was older, bigger, stronger, better adapted to the environment as evidence indicates, why did it just go away after the appearance of Homo sapiens? It makes about as much sense as stating that man descended from apes. If this was the case, why are there not new species of humans being created all the time? Because we still have apes today. I mean, there's a missing element. Now, one theory to explain the disappearance of the Neanderthal man is they somehow vanished as a species and Homo sapien replaced them until the older species was extinct. Now, there's no archaeological evidence, at least that I'm aware of, the two species interbred, which is a major puzzle in and of itself. Why did they not interbreed? The only answer would be if Neanderthal as a species was sterile, kind of like the mule. We know that Homo sapiens went forth and multiplied, so there's no sterility there. In fact, they multiplied like rabbits. But this theory is impossible, as Neanderthal existed for a couple of million years unless they were immortal, had to be mating in some fashion. And if the two species were related, as science has said for eons, then interbreeding between the two species would be possible. And knowing the propensity of modern man to wander, mating was very likely, if not certain, to occur. So, what could explain the disappearance of Neanderthal man as a species? Actually, more recent archaeological evidence suggests that Neanderthals and Cro-Magnons cohabited the planet for quite a long time, during which time the two species may well have mated. Certainly in North America, archaeological evidence shows that Homo sapiens first surfaced in the New World about 10,000 BC. And according to McNeil, in his book, even the skeletal characteristics of the first inhabitants of America were unusual, or to use his language, unclear. So it would appear there was some perhaps limited mating between the two species that would explain unusual, or to use McNeil's term, unclear skeletal characteristics. And of course, Zachariah Sitchin discussed the evolution of man in his series of books that he called the Earth Chronicles. As he said, it's clear Homo sapiens represents such a extreme departure from the slow evolutionary process that many of our features, such as the ability to speak, are totally unrelated to the earlier primates. So it's very clear to those not steeped in classical archaeological and anthropological thinking that our ancestors appeared long before they should have on the evolutionary scale. And this insightful observation certainly supports Sitchin's own theory that life as we know it was imported from elsewhere. Another mystery relates to how Homo sapiens became the most adaptable of all species. Though smaller and less robust than Neanderthal man, Homo sapiens were by far the more long-lasting species that actually makes no sense whatsoever. And as McNeil noted, all details of human evolution are uncertain. Now, this statement alone is mind-blowing. If Darwin's theory is correct at all, why would details of evolution be uncertain? That's never been addressed. A study of genetics makes it clear that the offspring has characteristics of both the parents. Thus, it becomes a mystery as to how Homo erectus became Neanderthal and how Neanderthal became Cro-Magnon. Each species has some characteristics not found in the parents. And for this reason, a lot of researchers believe there was some outside intervention in the development of human race as we know it. Now, I've heard discussion of recessive traits and junk DNA and almost every possible idea to explain how a species can mutate. But the bottom line is that before a change can take place in the makeup of a species, there must first be an outside intervention of some sort. This idea brings us back to the ancient astronaut theory or some variation. Even the early Sumerians talked extensively about being taught by a creature that came from the sea called Oannes. Oannes was said to have taught them the rudiments of civilization, interacting with the people on a daily basis. This brings to mind Sitchin's discussion of the fact that there were more male Anunnaki than there were female, taking into consideration the biblical notation that the Nephilim took daughters of man as their mates and produced offspring. It's clear there was some sexual advantage taken by these visitors. The question becomes, how extensive was this exploitation, and frankly, is it still going on today? Now, it was discussed in Evidence of Alien Contact, another book that I did with Omega Press. The Anunnaki are said to be a group of deities in ancient Mesopotamian cultures, the Sumerian, the Akkadian, the Assyrian, and the Babylonian. The name is written variously as Danuna, Danunakini, or Danuna, meaning something to the effect those of royal blood or princely offspring. According to the Oxford Companion to World Mythology, the Anunnaki are the Sumerian deities of the old primordial line. Their chthonic deities of fertility associated eventually with the underworld where they became judges. And they take their name from the old sky god An, or Anu. In fact, An was said to be the original king of the gods. Now, their relation to the group of gods known as the Igigi, which, according to Sitchin, are actually referred to often as the Watchers, but their relation's not really clear. At times, the names are used synonymously, but in the Atrahasis flood myth, the Igigi are the sixth generation of the gods who have to work for the Anunnaki. After 40 days, they rebelled. They were being put in the mines to mine gold that needed to be taken back to Nibiru and were replaced by artificially created race that became humans. Now, Jeremy Black and Anthony Green have a slightly different perspective on the Agigu and the Anunnaki. They wrote that the Agigu or the Agigi is a term introduced in the old Babylonian period as a name for the 10 great gods. And while it sometimes kept that sense in later periods from Middle Assyrian and Babylonian times on, generally it was used to refer to the gods of heaven collectively. This is the term Anunnaku was later used to refer to the gods of the underworld. In the Epic of Creation, it said there were 300 Agigu in heaven. Now, the Anunnaki appear in the Babylonian creation myth, Enuma Elish, in the late version magnifying Marduk. After the creation of mankind, Marduk divides the Anunnaki and assigns them to their proper stations, 300 in heaven, 300 on earth. In gratitude, the Anunnaki, the great gods, built the Sagalia, the splendid. They raised high the head of Sagila, equaling Apsu. Having built a stage tower as high as Apsu, they set up in it an abode for Marduk, Enlil, and Ea. And then they built their own shrines. In those days, each city was said to have its own personal god who lived there. And their shrines were actually their homes. The Anunnaki are mentioned in the Epic of Gilgamesh when Utnapishtim tells the story of the flood. The seven judges of hell are called the Anunnaki, and they set the land aflame as a storm is approaching. Clearly, they were looked at as extremely powerful. According to later Assyrian and Babylonian myth, the Anunnaki were the children of Anu and Ki, brother and sister gods, and they were the children of Ansar and Kishar, who in turn were the children of Lahamu and Lamu, the muddy ones, names given to the gatekeepers of the House of Far Water Temple, the Eridu, the site at which the creation is thought to have occurred. Now, there are stories in the various religious works about the Watchers. Watcher is a term used in connection with biblical angels. Watcher occurs in both plural and singular forms in the Book of Daniel, which makes reference to their holiness. The apocryphal books of Enoch, which were written in the 1st or 2nd century B.C., refers to both good and bad watchers, with a primary focus on the rebellious ones. Now, the watchers were said to be assigned to watch the earth, keep track of what the humans were up to. Others say the watchers may well be the Agigi, assigned to stay on board the base craft of the Anunnaki expedition. Interestingly enough, when man first went into space, an unknown orbiting craft was found in a polar orbit. It was named the Black Knight, and the powers that be generally refused to talk about it. There was a great deal of information to be found about the Watchers in the Book of Enoch, an early religious tract about a man named Enoch and his travels and travails. There are actually two books called the Book of Enoch. In the book, the Watchers are referred to as angels dispatched to Earth to watch over humans. They soon begin to lust for human women, and at the prodding of their leader, Samyaza, defect en masse to illicitly instruct humanity and procreate among them. And in keeping with what the Bible says, the offspring of these unions are the Nephilim, savage giants who pillage the Earth and endanger humanity. Samyaza and his associates further taught their human charges arts and technologies such as weaponry, cosmetics, mirrors, sorcery, and other techniques that would otherwise be discovered gradually over time by humans, not given to them all at one time. Eventually, God allows or sends a great flood to rid the earth of the Nephilim, but he sends Uriel to warn Noah so as to not eradicate the human race completely. The Watchers are then bound in the valleys of the earth until Judgment Day. According to Jude verse 6, these watchers are fallen angels who kept an everlasting chains until under darkness till Judgment Day. Now, the chiefs of tens of these fallen angels are also listed in the Book of Enoch. According to this book, the leaders are Semiazas, Arakiba, Ramiel, Kokubil, Tamiel, Ramiel, Daniel, Ezekiel, Barakahel, Asael, Amaros, Batarel, Enlil, Zequil, Samsapael, Satarel, Terrel, Comael, and Sariel. Now the book of Enoch also lists leaders of the 200 fallen angels who married and commenced an unnatural union with human women and who taught forbidden knowledge. These are listed in the book of Raziel, the Zohar, and the Jubilees. We won't go into all that. The account of the book of Enoch has been associated with the passage in Genesis chapter 6, verses 1 through 4, that talk of the sons of gods instead of watchers. Now, in the second book of Enoch, for the masculine given name, they talk about the Grigori. Now, the Grigori in Wallachia are those that were referred to as vampires, which I thought was interesting. The Jewish pseudepigraphion, second book of Enoch, refers to the Grigori, who are the same as the watchers of the first book of Enoch. The Slavic word Grigori used in the book is a transcription of a Greek word in post-classical times that means wakeful. Chapter 18 presents the Grigori as countless soldiers of human appearance, their size greater than that of giants. Now, this could be the basis for the race of giants that have been discovered in North America. A lot of graves, ancient graves, when opened by archaeologists, were found to contain bodies 9 to 12 feet tall, 6 fingers, 6 toes, and in most cases wearing copper armor. Nobody knows who they are. The armor and the copper appear to come from the mines up around the Great Lakes. And interestingly enough, as each one of these are dug up, the Smithsonian comes in to investigate, and they make all the evidence disappear. Now, according to chapter 18, they're located in the fifth heaven, identifies the Grigori, who are there with their prince, Satanael, rejected the Lord of Light. One version of the second Enoch adds that their number was 200 myriads. Furthermore, some went down home to earth from the Lord's throne and married women and befouled the earth with their deeds, resulting in confinement. The number of those who descended to earth is generally put at 3, but Andrei Orlov, while quoting the text as saying 3, remarks in a footnote that some manuscripts put him at 200. Chapter 29, referring to the second day of creation before the creation of humans, says that one from out of the order of angels, or according to other versions, one of the order of archangels, or one of the ranks of the archangels, conceived an impossible thought to place his own throne higher than that of the Lord's. And the Lord threw him from the height with his angels, and he was flying in the air continuously above the bottomless pit. Now, when you get into discussing religion, you cease talking about facts because, you know, quite frankly, religion is a hot spot for most people. And they tend to fall back on what they were taught by their religious leaders, right, wrong, or indifferent. The Mercer Dictionary of the Bible makes a distinction between the Grigori and the fallen angels by stating in fifth heaven, Enoch sees the giants whose brothers were the fallen angels. The longer recension of the second Enoch, chapter 18, verse 3, identifies the prisoners of second heaven as the angels of Satanael. Much of what we know about the Anunnaki comes from the research of Zachariah Sitchin, of course. He's long been the major investigator of the Sumerian records dating from the earliest days of the Sumerian civilization. He believes his work shows that many of the biblical stories of gods and angels originated in Sumeria and the activities of the Anunnaki. He claims the Anunnaki were on Earth for about 450,000 years, primarily looking for 450,000 years ago, primarily looking for gold, which was important to their culture, and maybe to their longevity. This gold prospecting was said to have originally taken place in Africa, and there's a lot of evidence that supports this premise. Not surprisingly, such advanced beings and ships with magical technology were viewed as gods by the primitive humans. The main person was Anu, who was in charge overall and probably remained in his ship in orbit around the Earth. Beneath him were... just got a news break. Herman Cain is hospitalized after testing positive for coronavirus. Beneath Anu was Ninhursag, Enlil. They were brother and sister. Enki was Marduk, Inanna, and a variety of minor deities, each with own areas of responsibility. From careful reading of the clay tablets and interpretation of the carvings on the cylinder seals found in ancient Sumer, Sitchin put together a detailed history of the Anunnaki, he believed showed that our history, as we teach it, isn't the true history of this planet. Now, the full story is long and worth reading if you're at all interested in this aspect of alien intervention in human affairs. There are 6 books in his series, which he calls the Earth Chronicles. An enemy takes the story of the Anunnaki from their origin on another planet, which is known as Nibiru, Planet X, Marduk, and the 12th planet, and tells how they came here to mine gold, manipulate the genes of humanity, and generally altered the normal run of affairs on this planet. Now, there's quite a lot of material. I had a chance to talk to Sitchin at great length when I lived in New York. I interviewed him on my show a number of times. In fact, though, I'm starting to pull out all the old shows, and I may play them because he had some fascinating things to talk about. So what is the evidence that ancient aliens interfered with human development? Well, nothing physical that can be pointed to as made on Mars or some other place in space, but we do have a lot of stories told by our ancestors that directly state that gods taught man the rudiments of civilization. Now, this should be enough to prove the case, but unfortunately it's not. Each of the 3 early civilizations in the Middle East talked about mysterious teachers, and in South America there was the mysterious Quetzalcoatl who walked the continent teaching the arts of civilization. So unless we propose an initial as yet unknown advanced civilization on Earth, we have to look to the stars for these teachers. Now historians, archaeologists, and anthropologists all consider such stories as superstitious nonsense. But why don't we look at the evidence and see what we come up with? One thing that most of the scientists, there's nothing that all agree with, is that over 6,000 years ago, the first great civilization on the planet was Sumer, located in Mesopotamia. It's called Chaldea in the Bible. Mesopotamia, which was located between the Tigris and the Euphrates rivers, known as today as Iraq. Sumerian civilization existed for over 2,000 years and had a major impact on the planet. Unfortunately, it vanished as inexplicably as it appeared. So, who were the Sumerians, and where did they come from? Well, we'll get to that, the answer to those questions tomorrow, because we've run out of time for today. So, until tomorrow at 6 p.m., this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.